on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to The Science of Sport. My name is Craig Harper. Every Sunday between 10 and 11 here on Melbourne's home of sport, 1116, your favourite station, Jackie Lada, Mark Fabreo, periodically, and myself are here talking all things health, fitness, wellness, sports, science, performance, the physical, the mental, the emotional. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
How's it?
I'm good.
Welcome back, champ. It's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. I was actually listening to you guys last week. Don't talk about my arms on here.
What did I say about your arms?
You said they were skinny. I told you during the break after that.
They are skinny.
That he was going to comment on it.
But he's a finely tuned Yep, put them away. He's now flexing them. Looks like a piece of string with a knot in it. But he does have a cut of fine form, and you are extremely fit. And interestingly, Jackie Lauder, we're going to talk about older, well, when we say older, probably post 35, 40, as we head into our more senior years, staying in shape and, if not staying in shape, getting in shape perhaps for the first time.
Yeah, well, I think if we have a look at all of the finalists in the Australian Open, Nadal is the youngest at 30. The others are 35, 35 and 36. So, you know, to be at the top level in any sport at that age, apart from if you're in golf, is pretty impressive. So I think it's a really great topic because we are a population that wants to exercise. There are a lot more events on where people, as you get older, you can still participate, and we do encourage people to stay in shape.
And what's really even more impressive, both of you, is that, you know, we're used to perhaps golfers or, you know, other athletes in not such full-on physically demanding sports be high level until their mid-30s, maybe 40s. But we're talking about one of the most demanding sports, especially for the blokes, only because they play five sets versus three, but for the women as well, one of the most demanding sports in terms of you need power, you need speed, you need agility, you need reaction time, you need, you know, flexibility, you know, it, and you need it for sometimes 5 hours, Mark.
Yeah, so one of the things that is quite impressive about tennis, these tennis players, these four being over 30, tennis is a very impact sport. Mm. And as we age, our muscles are very plastic.
Yeah.
They can maintain trainability, but our tendons are less so. Mm. So our tendons age at a different rate than our muscles, which means as you get older, that's why athletes get a lot of tendinopathies, a lot of tendonitis injuries, because their tendons, you can't really train a tendon, but you can train a muscle. So it's really impressive, given the amount of impact and the ballistic nature of tennis. It's, I mean, if you look at Tour de France, for example, cyclists ride well. I think Cadel was 35 when he won the Tour.
Yeah.
Because it's a weight-supported, you know, non-ballistic activity.
Mm.
Whereas these guys, it's very ballistic and very weight-bearing. And I dips my lid to them.
And you know who springs to mind? Sorry, Jack, someone you probably worked with at some stage. Who springs to mind when we talk about, you know, a full contact sport, high impact sport from a physical contact and also running on a pretty hard surface for a long time, who didn't seem to diminish was Brent Harvey, who 403 or, no, more than that, who's that, Michael Tuck, 400 and whatever games.
37, I think.
437.
And he's a midfielder, so would have had a lot of
massive running.
And
amazing. And I guess there's just that, apart from all the other stuff, that genetic variability.
Absolutely.
And then on top of that, you go, well, you know, I don't know what he weighs, but I'm guessing Brent Harvey wouldn't have weighed much more than 80 kilos versus somebody who is 100 kilos, just a lot more force through the joints.
But Dustin Fletcher, who was 100 kilos, he played to 40 as well.
I think the interesting thing too with the four
100?
With the four finalists,
he's pretty skinny,
that we're looking at for this weekend. So the two that played last night and the Williams sisters, and then this afternoon, three of those are technically on their comeback. Like, Venus has had a lot of time out, and both Roger and Nadal, 6 months ago, Roger's had 6 months out, have both been coming back from injury. So to be able to manage your body, you know, for the length of their careers pre-injury, Then they've had a significant amount of time out. Mm. Obviously, the condition they were in when they got injured for the rest of their body and the rehab that they've done, that's an incredible feat to be able to rehab and then get back to this level.
100%. And I think maybe the lesson, or maybe out of what they've done and what's happening now, is that maybe some of the older players need some legit time away.
Yep.
Still maintaining health and wellness and overall fitness, but without the pounding and without the grind. So trying to maintain, you know, strength and power and speed and cardiovascular fitness as much as possible without smashing themselves on a hard surface.
Yeah. The other thing is it requires a lot of dedication and a lot of, I mean, it's, I don't know if you've watched the Serena, if
yes.
either of you have watched the Serena doco. She works as much off the court on her body with nutrition, with the mental side of her game, and she has, like, she gets manipulated 2 or so hours a day. So, I mean, it takes to be, I was thinking about this last night, to be the best in the world, every single I has to be dotted and every T has to be crossed. I mean, otherwise you're not going to make it.
And especially in a sport like tennis, I think the thing that it has that many other sports don't is the intensity of travel. And even if you're traveling in a better class of seat on an aeroplane, you are still in, you know, basically an aluminium tube type thing. So the travel and the in and out of airports and all those sort of things, that takes its toll as well. And then to still keep competing. And I think when we're looking at the scheduling and looking after their bodies, I think this is one of the issues that has been discussed from when we look at Nick Kyrgios, is he's not, every time he has the major, major meltdowns, he's had so many matches that he's been playing. I think his scheduling contributes to that straw that breaks the camel's back.
David highlights all four are on a comeback. Serena was out for a big chunk of 2016. Good point, David. Also, Anonymous says, who's sent us 152 messages, send us your name so we can pump you up. Kelly Slater is 44 years old and is still matching it on the world tour with the young guys. He's a freak, but
especially when surfing's a full-on physical sport.
I love surfing, though, but what I think about surfing is awesome, other than when you smash into a reef.
Yeah.
There's very little contact. You know, yeah, you come a cropper, but you come a cropper in water, and yes, I know that can hurt, but for the most part, you think about what those guys, they have to be power to weight amazing. So they're not too big and heavy, most of them. They're aerobically very fit. You're training your whole body. Surfing, like paddling out, getting up, the whole process, it's a full body workout that addresses almost every component of fitness. Like, you think about what other sport where you don't even necessarily need to train other than surfing. Well, you could, but you're getting strength, power, speed, muscular endurance, aerobic endurance, balance, coordination, dexterity, you know, blah, blah, everything with surfing. It's almost like the best all-round sport for conditioning.
So I live across the road from an iconic beach in Sydney, Maroubra, and these guys are just recreational surfers, but, you know, I see them because I live across the road from the beach, and they are units, men and women. They're ripped.
Yep.
They've got just about
perfect symmetry. Yep.
Like, they're not too big.
That's right.
They
very
look
good at athletes.
Great, and they're ripped.
And so, that's right. How many, without being disrespectful, how many chubby high-level surfers do you see, apart from Oki, who was the exception?
Yeah, but he did lose a bunch.
Weight. He did lose a bunch.
Oh, but those guys, the pros, I saw a Mick Fanning training session on YouTube or something. They do so much core work. Have we got any surfers out there? Ring in and tell us what it's like.
94291116. Give us a call if you want to talk about. We're going to talk for a fair bit of the show about training as an older athlete, your favourite older athletes right now who are going around, and how to manage your mental, physical, emotional health and even to improve on where you're at. And even maybe a thing that we call biological age, which is a kind of bit of a make-up term, but it has some scientific validity. We'll talk to Mark about that off the SMS. Second one there, Jack. Do you want to read that for us?
Tom Brady ripping it up in the Super Bowl in Houston next week. And on the top one too, which I was going to mention later, Dylan Alcott won
what a
third
gun.
In a row yesterday. I was very disappointed it wasn't on mainstream.
Yeah, and for those people who don't know, he's one of our Paralympians. And
he's a Newcomb medalist.
He's a gun.
So, you know.
This year, last year,
he was a Newcomb medalist, double, like, I don't know how many Olympic
golds.
Didn't
they show it?
Now, no, it wasn't on mainstream.
And it was the semi.
And Tom Brady, if you don't know, is a quarterback in the NFL who's early, I don't know, maybe 42 or 3. And also Vince Carter turned 40. Who's in the NBA, he turned 40 this week. So there's a lot of good athletes. And I think what happens too with really good athletes like Tom Brady is his head is just his situational awareness, knowing where he is in space and time. You can't teach someone that. You can only learn that by doing. And he's just his understanding. It's like Wayne Gretzky, his understanding of where everyone was in space and time and where to put the puck and knowing where everyone would be. And same thing with Brady, knowing where to put the ball and knowing where his receivers will be and so on. We're going to go to our first break. Oh, yeah, let's go to our first break. Then we'll have a long chat next time. If you want to talk to us, Sean, you wait right there, Shawnee, from North Dandenong. We're coming to you straight out of the break. If you want to join Sean, 9429 1116.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo. So good,
I got you. Welcome back, Groovers. It is 20 minutes past 10 o'clock. The science sport, Jackie Lada, Professor Mark Fabreo, myself, Craig Harper. Just before we go to Sean, we'll do a quick little survey and we'll tell you the results before the end of the show. Mark and Jackie were just in here having the Rafa or Roger conversation. So tell us what you think. 0433981116 and we'll tell you the numbers. 0433981116. Just one word, Roger or Rafa. Let's go to Sean in North Dandenong. Morning, Sean.
Morning, how are we?
Good, man.
Excellent. One word, Roger.
Okay.
one genetic freak, Boomer Harvey.
Indeed.
And now, as a 48-year-old who's dealt with some health issues over the years, and in my 20s, I was quite a hyperactive nut, did some mini triathlons, played basketball 4, 5, 3 days a week. The thing I found the most, and even with my friends that are healthy in our age bracket, that when we're exercising now, it's a whole different ballgame. Mm. There's so much more importance on warming up and warming down with our older bodies and not smashing it as much as we once did.
You make a very relevant point. I've been training with the same guy since I was 25 and he was, 23? He's 2 years younger than me. And so now he's 51 and I'm 53. And we have to train completely differently. We have to really, really ease into it and look after ourselves, mate, and try to find a different type of intensity rather than just heavy, stupid weights with stupid young men just heaving around. Ridiculous, extraordinary things at great peril. Thanks for your call, Sean.
Do you think we're putting we're more educated now too about the benefits of cross training in our off seasons and things? I think we now know not to, like, you'll see some of the footy clubs and that they don't necessarily touch the balls quite as early. They'll do other training. So I think most of us in elite sport now, particularly your exercise science physiologists and stuff, know the benefits of cross training more than ever.
And I think what we're getting apart from, like, the main thing that's changed, clearly the talent hasn't changed per se because it's inherent. Mm. But what's being done with that talent, how that talent's being exploited has evolved. But also we're getting bodies coming into the process much more ready.
Yep.
Much more, like, forget talent.
We're measuring
more. Well, and just look at a game from the 1960s. Look at the bodies. It was like 36 plumbers running around. God bless the plumbers. Just pretty fit, pretty strong blokes running around, but they didn't necessarily look like what we would call them athletes.
The game's completely different. If you were to give a maximal oxygen uptake test, which is a test of aerobic fitness, those plumbers would have been around 50 mils per kilo. I'd say most AFL footballers now are more so tipping 65, 70, which is getting into, I mean, if you think about an elite endurance athlete, they're around 80. So it's amazing. I think AFL footballers are amazing athletes.
It's very different in terms of their roles, though, whereas, okay, you're centre-half back, you're centre-half back. You're full forward, you're full forward. This is, you know what I mean? Whereas now everybody's, like when I was at St Kilda, I worked there, for those of you who don't know, for a few years, and Plugger was my, God bless him, what a great man. But, running, nah. You know, it's like he and he didn't need to at that stage in that area. He was a phenomenon. But when he went to Sydney and they went, mate, you got to run a bit. And, you know, and it's very debatable, putting the age component aside, that he may not have been better when he was lighter.
It's going to be interesting this week on Friday night, the AFL Women's kick-off.
Oh, yeah.
So round one. So
is that that's televised, right?
Yes, at Icon. So awesome. It actually has been changed. It was going to be down at the Holden Centre.
What's Icon? Is that Princess Park?
Yes.
Right.
Yep, so over at Carlton. So they're expecting a good crowd, which I'm going to go along. I'm hoping a lot of other people will too. But it's interesting that I think a lot of the measurements and a lot of the bodies we have looked at, and Serena's probably been one of the main ones to defy this, is it's always been the male because of our sports of football and our more... I guess, ones that get media attention a lot more.
Mm.
But it'll be interesting now to see when we've got the women's league that is televised, the differences in the bodies now and in 5 years' time with this competition.
Yeah,
that's a really good point, because we're right now at the genesis of the sport, in the sense of it becoming a big deal.
Yeah.
But the other thing is I think people should give it a chance, and people should have the mindset that it's actually a different product. Because
very
it's
different.
Played by women. Mm. Now, the analogy I use is I love my sport and I love my football, i.e. soccer. And women's football, soccer, is a different product to men's, but I love watching both.
Mm.
And I think that's what people, they can't go, oh, these women aren't skillful, these women aren't as strong. Well, of course they're not, because they have... they're women, and they're comparing it to men. But what I'm saying is it will be a different product and people should give it a chance.
Yep. I think the matches we see now will be nowhere near the quality we see in a few years' time.
Correct.
And I've spoken to quite a number of the women footballers from different clubs, just in general conversation and meeting them through various channels. And a lot of them have commented about just getting used to the training and that's very different. They've all come from a level down where it wasn't the same intensity and doing all the time trials. Like a lot of them have never done time trials.
Some of them five levels down, really.
Before, yeah, and because we've obviously got this competition now, we've had to go a little deeper. So the quality that we're going to see now is going to be nowhere near what we'll see after eight rounds.
Mm.
And certainly not what we're going to see in the next few years.
It's funny when you just said, you're exactly right, Jack, when you just said, of course, because they're women, right? And I cringed and I thought, oh, God. But it's funny that when we're talking on this show particularly, we're talking about mostly from a scientific point of view. And the reality is that this is not an opinion or an idea or a judgment or a value assessment or... That men generally are stronger than women, therefore men run faster than women, they develop more power and speed, and they're heavier and they can hit harder. And all of these things are matters of science, not matters of opinion.
No.
But I just was wondering at my own reaction. Isn't it funny where, you know, you say, well, of course the guy will run faster than the girl over 100 metres purely because physiologically he has an advantage. But so many people... tend to turn that into something other than a physiological reality and into a personal criticism.
I didn't react at all. Isn't that interesting? I just listened to that, and I didn't even think twice about it, but you did.
We're three scientists sitting in here, right? We've all got an academic background. Well, mine, kind of. You know, but that's the thing, is that when I explain these things to people when I'm doing workshops and stuff, I can see the heckles. And I have to go, okay, steady on, listen to me.
Yeah.
Listen, just like most of you women in this room will be more flexible than me because you have an advantage, you know?
But
just
it's the same as culturally if you look at the Kenyan runners.
Yes.
Genetically, they're built, they're very, very different. They're fast twitch fibers and all that. Now, that's not being racist. That is literally, they're different. You know, we don't see, you know, a lot of examples where we can discuss it without people jumping down our throats. And I think that's a really good point that you make. It is scientific that we have to look at.
So what we have to do is understand that we want equality. So we want equal equality with difference. You can't say that you want sameness, because that's physiologically impossible. We want a quality. So if someone says that to you next time, Craig, and starts cringing, saying there's a difference between sexual dimorphism being, and equality.
Well, yeah,
it's one opportunity. The women now have an amazing opportunity, and I think that, to me, that's the biggest thing. Is for years and years, I've gone to the football for years. I love the game of football as a female, but there was never an opportunity to consider doing this as a career. These girls now, for a sport they love, I mean, you look at the fan base, there's so many more women that go to soccer, rugby, football, all of these traditional sports. Now they're getting an opportunity to show that they can also play it.
And you know you know what else is happening is that all of a sudden, everyone from girls in other sports, very good athletes in other sports, exercise science people, management, all of these people are going, oh, there's a national competition. I might get on board, or I might try to get on board. Now, all of a sudden, people who perhaps have a master's in exercise physiology or whatever, who may not have thought, well, I'm not going to take my master's degree down to, you know, that level. All of a sudden, that level is national. All of a sudden, here's a televised sport. Here's
credibility's gone
up. Yeah, and there's money being thrown at it, and profile, and there's girls in the Herald Sun, and so they should be, and blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, there are going to be other people going, I want to be part of this because, if they're being completely honest, it might help me. But also, now this is not just something that's played at the local ground on the weekend by, you know, some girls who can play and some girls who can't. We're getting good athletes, and we're developing this product.
I mean, and the products are different. So there's two sports in the Olympics that I prefer to watch women compared with men. And they're both at the Olympics, if that makes sense. The men are, and the two sports are gymnastics. I don't really like watching gymnastics, but if I'm watching gymnastics, I like watching the women, because they have, the men's all about power, and we see that in all sports. The women have grace. You know,
it's different.
So it's different, right? The other one is,
and power.
Yeah, the other one is diving. I don't know why, but for some reason, I would prefer to watch. So they're different. Whereas something like swimming doesn't matter, hockey it doesn't matter, and then some sports you go, for example, the combat sports like judo and wrestling. I prefer to watch the men, I guess, because it's a power sport, but the products are different. So people have to understand the physiology behind the sport and the physiology behind the products.
Yep.
Off the SMS, Thomas Burditch, biggest quads ever, no leg injuries for his entire career so far. Ash from Moonda. Cliff Young, we're talking about older athletes, of course. Cliff Young beating all comers in the Sydney to Melbourne Marathon as a pensioner. It still amazes me. That's from Tim. Me too, Tim. I remember that. And it was just this weird old dude that no one had ever heard of was running against
Cliff Young Shuffle, isn't it?
Runners like Yanos Kurios and all of these internationally renowned and highly trained and scientifically supported. And they were all running faster than him. It's just that he was sleeping way less. Like, he was, his speed was, I think, on average, about the slowest, but he was running for 20 hours a day. It was amazing.
I wish you didn't mention Yanis Kouros, because he didn't actually run against
Yanis. No, I said like that.
Yeah.
But he came in a bit later, didn't he?
He did, and he was ridiculously amazing. He would run the 20 out of 24 hours, and he would average 5-minute Ks.
That's insane.
And he was old. He was in his 40s. He was a freak, that guy.
Well, he would have been a national hero. He was Greek, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a freak.
Last one, Jack, off the top, before we go to a break, please.
Women's sport is a different aesthetic. Yes, we agree with that. Are men and all women better dancers? The soccer and the football are the best women's sports to watch. They're very the roles they play in dancing are very different. I think they both are amazing with the dancing.
We're going to go to a break listening to The Science Sport. If you've got a topic you want us to explore, a door you want us to open, a road you want us to go down, all right, enough with the metaphors. You get the idea. 9429 1116.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
So good, I got you.
Oh, giddy up, Buttercup, 24 minutes to 11 o'clock. Jackie Lada is amazing. Mark Fabreo is just, for a 74-year-old man, an amazing specimen. And, you know, I'm just hanging in there. Jackie Lada, over to you.
Yeah, so yesterday I went and did a presentation to about 250 referees.
What sport?
Soccer.
Right.
So they had their big seminar on, and it was interesting that a good portion of them had never looked at the psychology of being a referee. My question to you guys before I go into it anymore is, if you knew as a referee that a psychologist was coming in, how would you use me?
I probably would use you. Well, what I would want to know, I guess, is how do I stay performing at the level I need to under pressure? How do I deal with abuse? How do I block out that stuff? How do I remain focused? In other words, how do I be the best at my job with all the external kind of BS that might be thrown at me, either by players, coaches, or officials, or fans, if I'm coaching at a reasonably high level? That's me.
Mine was very similar, although a little bit more focused, and that is, how do I get a player who is really angry to not go the next step and to calm down and understand that I am not biased against him or his team.
Yep.
I am trying to manage the situation and he needs to calm down.
Very good.
So it was interesting when I was talking to them and just asking questions as we went through, because a number of them were sort of, it's you'd use it more at the elite level. But it's no different to being an athlete. They're under performance pressures. If you have really bad routines, like if you're thinking about a game 3 days out, you're going to be using a whole heap of energy. That's going to affect your decision making. It means that, you know, you're going to become more emotional. It's probably going to be easier to, you know, I guess, get you rattled in a game. So it's just, it's a very different audience. And I said to them now, a lot of our job in psychology is working with coaches and with referees. We're doing a lot more of that. So, yes, we're still sticking with our athletes. But I think in the past it's been underestimated, the psychological components of being a coach but also being a referee.
I think the challenge for you in sports psych is to get some of the higher-level coaches to actually pay attention, which some of them seem not to, because – you know, they just, it's their personality and it's their whatever, their ego maybe, that goes, well, this is how we're doing it. I don't care what the science says, or I don't care what the psychologist says. This is how I will lead and manage and communicate and connect and coach.
Yeah.
Not to say that they don't have skill or they don't have a right to do that, but I also think that it's at our own peril. If we don't use resources like you and the people in your profession who are all about understanding human behaviour and therefore communication and connection, like, why wouldn't you? It's like, why wouldn't you use a strength and conditioning coach? Why wouldn't you use a nutritionist or a dietitian? I've said that to you for 10 years. Yeah. I don't get it.
The one thing you said there is that they have a, even though they have a right to do that, I actually disagree with them. I don't think they have a right to do that.
They have the power to do it.
They do.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they do. But the thing is, their brief is to get the best out of their athletes. And if they take the draconian view, have a look at the Beveridge. He had so much emotional.
I was thinking artificial intelligence. What did he have? Robots down there? What is it? Is
AI. Emotional intelligence. And he EQ, got the actually. Best. He got the best.
That's right.
All right, whatever. He got the best out of his...
Try not to get in her space, will you? We've had this conversation.
Let him keep going.
And he got the best out of his athletes. If you think, if you're such an egotist that you think, I'm going to do this my way and
get everything done.
But it won't, it, it actually won't work today's
and
relationships.
And also they're very different because you've got a different generation of athletes coming through that are different education levels, have had different things in their life to think about. Genetically, things are different. We're eating different foods, different lifestyles. So, you know, a coach is a different generation. So it is important that you take into account everything. But so, I just thought that was interesting.
Well, we're not for one moment suggesting we should tell coaches how to coach.
No.
We're saying that coaching is a multifaceted job, and part of that is behavioural psych and connection and communication, part, not all.
So, Jackie, do any athletes respond well to being shouted at?
Yes.
Some do.
Some of them have definitely said, however, the majority have, in my experience, the ones I've dealt with, do not. And it's also the frequency of being yelled at as well. So this is why it's really important to understand the personalities of who you're dealing with. If you've got someone who's highly motivated, can do everything themselves in terms of getting themselves up and going and sticking to their diet and all that sort of stuff, they don't need to be yelled at. So it is very, very much an individual experience, but most human beings don't respond to being yelled at.
I had an experience, speaking to that, where I was at a very well-known sporting club with a very well-known coach and a very well-known player at that stage. And the coach just went off his head at this guy. And I know this guy well. And from that moment, that was it. He was done. He hated him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want anything to do with him. He didn't want to listen to him. He belittled him, the coach, whether
in
or not
in front of his peers,
100%. Whether or not he meant it or not, the outcome was this guy felt humiliated, he felt insulted, he felt degraded, and just a switch flick. That was it, and never ever did that guy like or respect that guy again.
But athletes also—they're not going out there to muck up. And if you think, in sport, there are so many things that we think are acceptable. If you walked into your office and your boss, when you're trying your hardest to do your job, yelled at you and treated you the way we see things happen in sport, they'd be fired and up on charges for bullying and everything else.
100%.
So it's unacceptable, but I think they just, in any industry where you say, well, that's just how it is, well, that doesn't make it right.
Let's switch track a little bit and get back to where we were going to go. I just want to, we'll go to break in about five, but I just want to talk to you both about, we'll start with you, Mark. So people, as we're getting older and, you know, there's people listening to this right now that are 35, 40 plus that are not in the shape that they want to be. And so whether or not that's because of lifestyle or diet or the fact that they have a sit down job or whether or not it's that they don't move much or exercise too much. What are some of the things, and you think at the same time, Jack, the precautions, how do we start and maintain and create lasting change, behavioural change and physiological change?
Oh, we're going now.
No, you're up.
We're going now. Okay, so the first...
Sorry, mate.
I thought we were going to do a break. My apologies. So the first thing is when people start...
Yeah.
The mindset, I think... And this is getting into Jackie's domain a bit, but I can only take this from my experience as well when I've had a break, is that you will get to a level that you've been at before rather quickly.
Right.
So most people will start exercising or training at an intensity which is probably a little unhealthy and far too intense. Mm. And that causes... disappointment because you can't complete the task. It causes pain and it may actually jeopardize your health. So if you haven't been doing anything for a long time and your lifestyle has been really sedentary and you're overweight, the first thing you should do is go and get a checkup because you need counsel from a doctor to say, yeah, you're okay to do this. The second thing I think you need to do is start off very, very slowly and progress in a very safe way and make the activity something that makes you feel positive. So feel good physically, no injuries, it's not really hard, and then you'll get progression. But I think the main thing you have to do is be patient with progression.
That's one of the biggest challenges, I reckon, this this quick fix addiction, this ability that we seem to not have to delay gratification. Like, we want to be awesome next Tuesday. And I've worked with people, as you have, Jack, I'm sure, who, without being rude to anybody, have really not treated their bodies well for 20 years. Let's be honest. And they come to me and they're like, you know, this is me. I'm 35 kilos overweight, high blood pressure, pre-diabetic, you know. And what they're kind of saying is, I want to look, feel and function amazingly in about 10 weeks, 12 weeks. And you go, listen, champ, it took you 20 years to get there. Let's maybe work on a year. A year would be awesome, you know.
Yeah, I think everything Mark said I completely agree with. I don't think he left too much off that. I think the only things that I would add in is don't try and make a list of the areas where you'd like to make a change and then pick which one's your priority and start with that first. And whether that's go and see a doctor, or if it's your diet, go and see the dietitian, or, you know, if you know that your head is the thing, your motivation stops you, go and see a psych. So pick your one area and start with that and get that sorted before you start adding all of the others on. And this is what I said to you, I think, last week, is that I was running all last year and I'll continue doing that. But this year, because I hate weights, this year I'm going to try and put a few more weights in. So I've picked a thing each year.
Why don't you and Skinny Arms over there just meet me once a week and we'll just get it on?
Yeah, no.
The other thing is there's a saying that says you can't outrun a bad diet. So people get really discouraged when they start to exercise and they don't lose weight. The message is the benefit of exercise has nothing to do with weight. You will eventually make changes to all areas of your lifestyle where you will lose weight. But in that first 12 weeks, Craig, you tell me how many people lose a ton of weight by just exercising and not worrying about their diet?
Very few.
Correct.
Very few. They improve fitness and things happen, but not at the rate they'd like them to. And you and I have had a bone of contention, or we've gone head-to-head on this next thing I'm about to bring up quickly. But I'm actually coming around. I hate to say it, but I'm coming around to the Fabreo paradigm, and that is that.
Should I write this down?
Yeah. Just put down the date. No. Well, I still think what I think, but I understand more where Mark's coming from. That, like, I'm always like, if you enjoy it or don't enjoy it, I care. But my thing is, well, does it work? Because a lot of times the things that we need to do to create shift are not necessarily the things we want to do. Having said that, which you always say, do something you enjoy, I'm with you, especially for people getting back on the horse. Like, if you're going to do something, doesn't matter how effective it is, if you hate it, you're not going to maintain it.
Well, I do agree. I've always agreed with that. However,
She's become me.
Haven't become you, because that's absolutely the first thing I do. But the enjoyment may not just be the actual exercise. Like, I don't enjoy running, but
you enjoy the outcome.
But I had my sister with me, and so there was that component of something we were doing together, and that would be the other thing I add on, is there's a bit of a social side to it. So if you want to, say, start running and it's not something you like, but you can have another component of enjoyment in there, then it might help offset. So it's not just the actual activity, it's the way you do it, the environment.
And also something I'm not a fan of, but I think it's a great idea, I just don't do it myself, which is group exercise. So every second gym gym in Australia pretty much has got a million different group X classes, where from running, boxing, kickboxing, riding, even swimming classes, outdoor stuff, indoor stuff. So if you want to do something where there's that social component, explore that. We've got to go to a break, big boy. Coming up after 11 o'clock, don't forget BP, Paul Aiken, Sean Manawira. Between 11 and 12, all things tennis, of course, with the first serve. And after that, 12 till 6, Big Kev is in town.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Check us out. The Science of Sport 1116, Science of Sport SEN 1116, all one word. Science of Sport SEN 1116, all one word. Our show gets loaded up in podcast form, so you can listen to it. I know you'll all be rushing back listening to it repeatedly. Jackie, our producer, is smiling at me because she's probably wanted me to say that for the last 52,000 shows, and I never have. So now I'm in the good books with her. Just before we go to you, MF, I've got a gig here in Melbourne on March 18 where I'll be just blowing your head off with inspiration and motivation. Well, hopefully that's the goal at Deakin Uni, March 18. If you want to come along, 3 hours of kind of head stuff, mind stuff, performance stuff, life stuff, me talking at your face and hopefully motivating you to change your life and the bits thereof. Go to craigharper.net, all one word, craigharper.net, all one word. Go events, then live tour. And there's a discount thing in there for you. Just type in S-E-N, very tricky. S-E-N, and you'll get a $47 ticket instead of a $77 ticket. Thank you. Over and out. Mark Fabreo,
now,
over to you.
Now, Craig, we have to congratulate you about something. You gave us a really good plug for this show inadvertently.
Quick apology. I don't like to do apologies, but Craig Harper thanking himself.
Thanks to Jackie. Thanks to Big Carl. Thanks to other Jackie. Thanks to me.
Yep. So really thanks to you, Craig Harper. But no, but it's a bit stiff. It's a tight field.
Now, that was the...
I can't believe...
That was the off-the-bench third-person congratulator of the year, and you didn't get a vote. You got a mention.
You got an honourable mention.
I definitely should have got something, Hutchie. Come on. Hutchie, I'll give him another one this week.
So listening to that yesterday, I went, oh, that's a really good wrap for our show. And I didn't really think you self-congratulated, but you kind of did.
Well, you know, no one else thanks me. So, you know... Thanks to me. Jackie
that was in the same show where he said his dad didn't love him enough and give him the right response. And my dad ended up ringing in.
That's right. It was a very emotional week.
It was.
I actually went to Morwell on Friday and had dinner with Ron and Mary. I hugged the old man. It was like hugging, I don't know, a bronze statue at the museum. But he's coming. I'm just going to keep hugging him. I'm just going to keep moving on in
so
there.
So did Jackie's dad come over and give you a hug?
Yeah, Ken and I spooned on the couch Thursday night. We watched
Suits.
Sleepless in Seattle. Suits.
That's what you want to watch Thursday night.
Oh, really?
That's what Kenny's watching.
Really?
Yep.
How good is that show?
It's a great show. I
don't even know it.
Now, did you want 2 minutes or was that you're an idiot. Mark said to me before, oh, no, can I have 2 minutes before the end of the show? I'm like, no,
I don't talk like that.
No, I said you can have one.
That was less than a minute.
There was, folks, there was a very interesting dialogue, because that is conversation going on during the black break between Jackie and Mark. Not me. I was just over here talking about the differences between the Williams sisters. And you said this word, somatotype. What does that mean?
Somatotype is body type. So you have endomorphism, ectomorphism, and mesomorphism. And you would call Serena,
call her 70-30 meso-endo.
And would you call her sister ectomorph?
100%.
Yeah, and so an ectomorph is a very linear,
lean.
An endomorph is muscular.
Yeah, muscular.
And a mesomorph is sort of...
Endomorph.
Mesomorph.
Oh, meso is muscular and endo carries more fat.
Yeah,
I'm 50-50. I'm right in the middle. And not many people are, you know, and this is rough science, but not many people are 100% ecto, just Venus and you.
I knew you were going to say.
Jackie and I are 50-50. Yeah. We need to watch ourselves. We're built for power, but also a little bit of comfort.
I just knew that was coming.
But they are very different, aren't they?
Ah, for
and
sisters.
Yet, it's both amazing at what they do.
Yeah, and the other thing is that when they were young, because they showed, they were like that still. I mean,
We talk about nature and nurture, and you think about, well, unless there's something big that we don't know, they pretty much had the same upbringing, the same resources, the same love, the same everything. But to see them physically and also to pay attention to what they say and how they say it and the way they connect and communicate, not better or worse, just very different people, aren't they?
So I'm going to ask you a question about the mentality. You were saying that their emotional... the way they are emotionally is different. Do you think if their personalities swapped, their success would also swap?
I definitely think it would be different. I definitely think that, like I was watching Serena the other night when she smashed her racket on the ground at the end of the second game, I think, And she's playing her sister. Well, that's okay. But it's 1-1 in the first set. For sure, don't break your racket yet.
But the interview afterwards, if you saw that, she did say that, you know, she banged it in frustration. She didn't realise how hard she'd banged it. And she said, God, that's when I kind of even had a look and went, gee, I've got a little bit of power here. So she was surprised with how easily that broke. She didn't realise she hit it that hard.
So Craig answered my question, but you didn't, Jackie.
Well, obviously you're going to have something different. I mean, because we can never do that, you can only assume that, yes, but I mean, the intensity of competitor that Serena is, and when she was on Match Point, they showed her and she was saying to herself, fight, 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 like, you know.
She's full till, on. She's
hardcore. She's absolutely full on, which is why she's so good.
She's a warrior. If you go to war, take her.
Because I agree with you. I think if they did switch their personalities,
there would be different results.
There'd be different results.
Just quickly before we go, first serve with BP. Coming up between 11 and 12, Kevin Hillier. Between 12 and 6 with Sunday Sports Central. Just the result of our little poll. Probably running, I'm going to say, about 80% Roger, which is a surprise. Jackie's just coughing or sneezing and dying. She's left the room. So Mark and I will say goodbye. Who are you going for tonight?
I'm split. I think I would like Roger to win because it's just a bit of a fairy tale. He hasn't won one for ages.
And who's your prediction, though?
Roger.
Roger. Roger's your prediction. I want Roger. I'm going with Rafa. Jackie has almost died but regained her composure.
I'm going with Fed.
You're going with Fed?
Yep.
Have a great weekend, folks. We'll be back next week, 10 to 11, same time, same station. Have a good one.